Yes.
Call to order this hearing of the State and Local Government Operations and Oversight Committee, Friday, February 12, 2010. First bill before us is Senate File 895, Senator Sharon. Senator Sharon, if you would just briefly describe the bill and then indicate the reason that it's coming before this committee, and I understand that you have an amendment that you'd like offered to bring the bill into the guideline standards that we set in this committee. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Senator Rest and members of the committee. This is Senate File 895. This is a bill that is coming to you because components of the bill relate to rule promulgation and reporting. What the bill is about is the development of an academic detailing program. An academic detailing program is a program by which information based on the best science and research that we have about drugs and medications would be made available to prescribers in the state of Minnesota. And that information would be channeled through a system that is free and clearly has at least an arm's length transaction from anybody who has a pointed interest in the outcome of that prescribing. So that in the current situation, much information only comes to prescribers through those who are selling the medications. This program would provide an alternative to that. It doesn't displace or remove the opportunity for those who are selling prescriptions in the state of Minnesota from presenting information and research that they have on medications to prescribers, but it does establish a program by which professionals are able to bring information directly into the offices of the prescribers and give unbiased information to the degree that we can achieve research in that level to the prescribers. That's the essence of it.
Okay, our interest is in subdivisions 4 and 5. Subdivision 4 has a reporting requirement, and the amendment you'd like offered deals with that.
That's correct.
And then subdivision 5. Let's deal with the subdivision 4. To start with, members,
have an amendment,
it is the A2 amendment that is being distributed now. While that's A2 amendment.
We have it.
We have it.
You have it? Okay. Who would like to offer that? Senator Marty. Senator Marty moves adoption of the A2 amendment. Senator Sharon, would you like to explain what that does?
The A2 amendment adds language that that we have been adding to all of our reporting requirements that adds the chairs and the ranking minority members to receive the reporting information.
Okay. Everybody understand that amendment? Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. With regard to subdivision 5, what necessitates giving rulemaking authority to the commissioner? Why can't everything be in statute?
May I introduce to you Senator Rest, Peter Wyckoff, who's the director of the, actually the director of the Minnesota Prescription Coalition, the membership of which is listed in some materials in your packet. Also is the involved with the National Community Catalyst Program for the Pew Prescription Project, and before retirement was involved with both the Minnesota Metro Senior Federation for over three decades. And I would ask that we could direct the question to him.
Mr. Wyckoff, why does the commissioner need rulemaking authority?
Senator Rest, members of the committee, the reason for this is it's a developmental proposal in collaboration with the College of Pharmacy, other state agencies, the health department, to develop this program for use by the medical community. And the first parts of this would really be trying to design that program. And so until the program is designed, you really can't have, you know, the types of things that would actually be in statute. So the first part and crucial part of this is to develop the ground rules for the development of an independent prescriber education program.
Okay, are there questions for Senator Sharon or Mr. Wyckoff? Seeing none, I have had a request from people to testify regarding this bill. Mr. Griffin? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Phil Griffin. I'm representing Life Science Alley. Life Science Alley is a trade association with over 600 members. We were originally started by device manufacturers, but represent a wide variety of Minnesota companies that are doing work in the life sciences alleys, all the way from the big three medical device manufacturers here down to startup companies and all of the companies that surround that. We are here today to speak in opposition to Senate File 895. I know that the bill is before this committee for a very small reason, and we are continuing to say to the legislature that any money that's expended in the healthcare field that does not go towards improving the access to care or the quality of care is money that is not well spent. In this case, it would be money trying to set up a new program that we don't believe is necessary, and rulemaking authority will require the expenditure of that money to do nothing to improve the quality of care. We believe that there are private solutions that are in place, that health plans use pharmaceutical benefit manufacturers to try and meet the needs of determining what is the efficacy of various drugs. The proposal is supposed to try and help reduce the cost of drugs and the misprescription of drugs. We believe that those things are already being met in the private sector, and we would urge the committee to reject this bill. If you aren't aware of it, we have a very high rate of the use of generic drugs in Minnesota. We don't think that this
Mr.
is going
Griffin,
to change
you're getting
that.
Far afield from giving the Commissioner of Health rulemaking authority.
Madam Chair, I don't think I am, because what we're talking about is giving the department rulemaking authority to set up this program.
And we're only dealing with whether the issue should be decided in statute or whether it should be decided in rulemaking, not the content of the rulemaking.
Madam Chair, your point is well taken. Let me say to the committee and yourself, if in fact we don't have a program developed, giving the commissioner the authority to do this is giving the commissioner wide-ranging authority. We would suggest that you ought to develop the program first and then bring it back to statute if, in fact, you think that is necessary. Madam Chair, members, if there are questions, I'd be happy to address them.
Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Griffin.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Also, Marjorie Powell.
Madam Chair.
Senator
Pappas. As she's coming to the podium, could you just clarify, this bill came to us from the Health Committee?
Yes, it did, and it's been asked to be re-referred to Business, Jobs, and Industry, Senator Metzen's committee, and that's where the motion will be.
What do they have to do with this?
When a chair of a committee requests referral of a bill, we seldom deny that referral.
The Graveyard Committee.
There you go. Ms. Powell?
Senator Rest, members of the committee, my name is Marjorie Powell. I represent the women and the men who are doing the research to develop new medicines, do the clinical trials, seek FDA approval, and bring those new medicines to physicians and patients in Minnesota and elsewhere. I represent a number of companies that are also members of Life Science Alley, but we are the people who are actually developing new medicines. Because we're developing new medicines, we spend a great deal of time educating physicians about those medicines, when and how to use them. That gives us a great deal of experience in how representatives should be communicating effectively with physicians, what kinds of relationships are appropriate and are not appropriate, so that we have information that would be useful to the commissioner as he is
Ms.
doing
Powell,
rulemaking.
We need you to speak to whether the commissioner should have rulemaking authority or not. That's the issue, not the policy.
Thank you. That's, I think, where I was going to, that we think there are a great many issues that need to be fleshed out that would either have to be done through rulemaking or, as the prior witness said, should be developed ahead of time and then brought to the various committees of the legislature to be incorporated in a statute, that rather than just giving the commissioner open-ended authority to address the vast number of things that would have to be addressed in rulemaking, such as qualifications for the people doing the development of the content, as well as qualifications for the people doing the education programs, assist a code of interactions between the counter detailers and the physicians or other healthcare representatives, the kinds of complaint systems that would be available for somebody who thought that a counter detailer was behaving inappropriately or providing information that was not consistent with the federal government's requirements for use of a particular prescription drug. There are a vast number of areas that would require rulemaking, including things like what are the criteria for hiring the people who are doing the development of the content and so on. So we think there would be an enormous amount of rulemaking that would be involved, and all of that would take a considerable amount of time on the part of the commissioner, the Board of Pharmacy, and all of the other agencies, and also require potentially multiple sequences of notice and comment rulemaking in other states where they've developed these kinds of programs, particularly the one operational one in Pennsylvania. They did not do rulemaking, and nobody has any except knowing that the focus is on encouraging physicians to prescribe generics. Nobody knows how they're making decisions about what information to include in the educational programs and what to exclude.
Okay, are there any questions for Ms. Powell? Senator Marty, you want to make a motion?
Madam Chair, I'll move the bill. Move the bill be recommended as amended, be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on Finance, because I don't know what reason is to go to the Jobs Committee, and I'm not sure. I think
Senator
that
Marty,
be,
I believe that they will. They'll rule
they
21 it if we don't
they
send
do
it
that.
To
but
Senator
they could
Metzen.
Do that, I think. But
beg pardon?
They could do that. I mean, Senator Metzen could do that. I just don't see what logic it goes to the Jobs Committee. I think we could send it to the Veterans Committee. Mm-hmm. Senator Vickerman didn't ask for it, but I mean, it has about as much logic going there, it seems to me. I think it has to go to finance. Okay. I don't know if there are any others.
Madam Chair, I agree. I think that, committees should not ask for bills that aren't within their jurisdiction. And I think maybe there was a mistake made here, and that we should overrule the mistake and send it to finance.
Well, we have the motion from Senator Marty, and I have indicated the other policy chair's indication. We can vote on it with that full understanding. Senator Marty moves that Senate File 895, as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. And the bill will be sent to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
The next bill before us is Senate File 1770, the Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force. Welcome to the committee, Senator Jungbauer. This bill is, we are the first stop for you, and if it is acted on favorably, it would be going to the Rules Committee. As you probably know, it has membership from the Senate and the House, and anytime we have a group that's established that has members of the legislature on it, the Rules Committee as secondary jurisdiction.
I understand that, Madam Chair.
And you, this is its first stop, and you have an amendment for us, which I hope meets the guidelines.
Yes, Madam Chair, members, I have amendment A2.
Okay, Senator Youngbauer, it's an author's amendment. Senator Vickerman moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor of that amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the A2 amendment as a delete all amendment before us. Senator Youngbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1770, as amended with the A2 amendment, actually does put it in order of how we can create this task force legitimately. It was amended in the House as well to make sure that everything met the rules. But, members, the Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force continues the work of the Legislative Commission to End Poverty. And that commission did good work. We took a lot of testimony around the state. We had a lot of civic engagement and came up with some conclusions of ways that we could reduce poverty and work people out of poverty. And this task force that we're trying to create here, and we've charged them with a job of what we came out with conclusions for that poverty task force. And we're trying to create this task force to make sure that we can continue on down the road. It doesn't make much sense, members, to put a commission together, do good work, come out with good guidelines and good places to start to help folks get out of poverty, and then end the commission and not move anything forward, not keep people working towards that goal. So in short terms, that's what this does, is creates a small task force. We believe it has zero fiscal impact, and we're still working to make sure the language allows it to have zero fiscal impact, but we want to move these issues forward, and I have some good testifiers, and we'll try to keep it short for members today.
And Senator Youngbauer, we, as I mentioned, we have not had a request from the Committee on Finance, just the even with the bill as originally introduced, just from the Rules Committee. Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Betzel, yep. We didn't have any requests from you, but
no.
Do you see one here?
No.
But you do see something in the delete all
yes.
amendment.
Yes.
Senator Youngbauer, just bear with us here.
Yes.
We are going to do a couple of things to your amendment, but I want you to know how much I appreciate the work you've done with counsel to get the bill in line with our guidelines. Senator Betzel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Youngbauer, the Subdivision 1 purpose statements, we do a lot of studies and so forth, but we try not to actually put the results of the studies into session law or the statutes. I mean, that's what we have subsequent bills to do. So, and actually, if anything, purpose statements and legislative findings can kind of confuse things because they may be adding more into the what's passed the legislature than was ever intended. It's usually fluff language, and we usually try to avoid that. So unless you have any strong reasons to want to keep it in, Madam Chair, I would move to strike Section 1, Subdivision 1, which is the purpose statement.
Senator Youngbauer.
Madam Chair and Senator Betzel, actually, we discussed that, and I as well do not agree with purpose statements, and we tried to make sure that most of the purpose statement was in line with the findings of the commission under Subdivision 3 under duties, so I think I would have no problem in, removing Subdivision 1.
Senator Betzel moves the deletion Subdivision 1 on page 1, which would be lines 1-4 through line 120. Any discussion of that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair?
Senator Roebling?
Thank you. When we strike that, we also took out the language that was in the bill. Well, I guess it's still... No, we took out the title. Somehow.
I said lines 1-4, subdivision 1.
Okay. All right. I think we're okay.
So it would be renumbering the subdivisions, Senator Roebling. And before we get to the content of it, authors can choose one of two paths with regard to the appointment of members, and each of which has been accepted by this committee on varying occasions. And it has to do with the way in which members of the Senate are appointed. And we have, you can either have everybody appointed by the subcommittee on committees, or you can have the majority leader appoint the majority member members and the minority leader having authority to appoint the minority members. This is a perfectly correct way of doing it, but I want to make sure that that you understand that and that this was your choice.
Yes, Madam Chair, I understand that. And in my tenure in the Senate, I've seen that the majority leader has been very cooperative with the minority leader in allowing that input to make sure that we feel like we're well represented. So I feel comfortable with the language.
Okay, thank you. Senator Jungbauer, do you want to call your witnesses? Mr. Elwood, are you first?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. I was here to answer some questions in case they came up, but let's get to the witnesses.
I think we have had at least a brief explanation of the bill, and we do have some people who have asked to testify. First, Ms. Deborah Schlick, the Executive Director of Affirmative Options Coalition. Is she present? Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Deborah Schlick. I'm the Executive Director of the Affirmative Options Coalition. Our coalition is a coalition of more than 50 nonprofits around the state of Minnesota who advocate for opportunities for Minnesotans to move out of poverty. I'm here to speak in favor of this bill and to just say very briefly that we were very engaged with the Legislative Commission to End Poverty. Spent a lot of time watching that group's work and interacting with the members, and feel like we have to recognize Senator Marty, who co-chaired that, Senator Roebling, who was on the executive committee, Senator Laurie and Senator Pappas, who served on that. And what we saw happen in that commission was a space created for a very different sort of conversation than happens in committee meetings. We saw very honest bipartisan conversations. And conversations about issues that can often polarize a political discussion really being explored to find out what do members understand, what do they see as solutions. We see this task force continuing that sort of space to tackle issues that otherwise can polarize the political process to find real solutions. We see that the task force allows for conversations that need to happen outside committee boundaries because of the cross-cutting nature of the issues. And we see this task force taking some initial very good ideas out of the commission and turning them into concrete proposals that will come back to the legislature.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Schlick? Next, we have Amy Brennigan, is it?
Yes.
The Director of the Office of the Economic Status of Women. Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Amy Brennigan. I'm the Director at the Office on the Economic Status of Women here at the State Legislature. And I want to thank you for bringing this bill forward, Senator, and speak in favor of the bill. There are really three reasons why we support this bill. Number one, we very much support the work of the Poverty Commission continuing. Our office had the good fortune to travel and spend time with the commission, and it's important to us to see this work have some legs and keep moving. In particular, in this bill, there are two elements that pertain to women that we are very pleased that are included. First of all, the study of predatory lending and the impact of predatory lending on women, particularly older women. By way of context, we're part of a group that works on economic issues for older women. And the median income in retirement for women in Minnesota is $12,691 compared to $24,000 for men. And a bare-bones budget says that it costs about $24,000 to get by with health, food, and little more to pay for expenses. This study also showed that this problem is the most severe for single elder women. Additionally, we see that predatory lending disproportionately impacts women of color. We see that African-American women and Latina women are much more likely to be victims of predatory lending than white women and than white men. And we see that this falls on their shoulders disproportionately. The third piece I will raise, though, is a positive piece, in that this bill also includes information about asset development programs. And one thing that we know about matched savings programs, asset development programs for low-income women, is that their participation and success rate is very high. The matched savings program in our state, the FAME program, includes a roster of 78% women who are participants in that program. We know when women get the tools for financial literacy that they are more likely to succeed and they are more likely to lift themselves out of poverty. They are more likely to take that hand up with the tools and information that they receive. So we thank you very much for considering the bill, and we hope that it will move through and that this task force will be created so we can look more deeply at these issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Brennigan. Are any questions or comments from Ms. Brennigan? Next, we have Kim Schaff, FAIM program developer, Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington Counties.
Thank
Schaff,
you, Madam.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, ma'am. Identify
yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kim Schaff, and I'm the FAME coordinator at Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington Counties. I'm here today not only representing Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington Counties, but also representing the Family Assets for Independence in Minnesota program, also known as FAME. FAME is an individual development account that helps low-income wage earners acquire an asset, either through first-time home ownership, small business development, or post-secondary education. FAME's success in helping people move towards greater economic stability while saving for an asset is in large part due to the required 12 hours of financial education and one-to-one coaching participants receive. The one-to-one coaching is where participants learn how to save, address and reduce debt, understand the importance of fixing and protecting their credit, as well as becoming conscious consumers. FAME coaching is aimed at helping participants address their financial barriers, so what they need to do to build their way out of poverty. And this may include such goals as paying down debt, increasing their credit scores, creating and maintaining a budget that allows for saving. So in the areas how we help, as far as education, in most cases we're helping people who are receiving financial aid, but there's still a cost to them outside of the financial aid. So we help with the cost of tuition and books, thus saving them out-of-pocket expenses. In home ownership, if people are interested in purchasing a home, they must be committed to working on and ensuring that their debt is reduced and their credit is good by the end of the two-year time limit. Some participants must also be committed to increasing their income as well. And for small business development, FAME helps people start a new business or expand an existing business. And some examples of that is a couple used the FAME funds to remodel in-home daycare that had mold and to help increase the play area and make it a safer place for the children. IDA programs like FAME do work. Since 2000, FAME participants have saved over $2 million. Since 2000, over 1,400 assets have been acquired by FAME participants. And since 2000, approximately 2,800 FAME participants have attended 12 hours of financial education. Currently, there are 626 open FAME accounts, and we know that there are many other low-income wage earners around the state that could benefit from the services that FAME provides. Therefore, a task force is necessary to increase the scope of asset development programs such as FAME and to improve the coordination of various efforts around the state. And I would now like to introduce one of my FAME participants that was nice enough to come along and share her experience. She's been extremely successful in the FAME program and was actually the recipient of the 2009 FAME Best Savers Award in Education. So, Laura Hodges.
Ms. Hodges, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. My name is Laura Hodges. I am a FAME participant. My goal was education. I would like to say that I'm just so excited that this bill made it to this new session. I want to say that FAME is different than some other programs out there because it doesn't just throw money at me and tell me to go figure it out. Kim worked with me one-on-one. I went through financial literacy education, and that helped me look at long-term goals, even if it's short-term sacrifices that I would have to make. And in May 2009, I was able to graduate with my bachelor's degree as a first-generation college student, and my children got to see that. So I can see that this will be a long-term success for my children as well.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hodges. Are there questions or comments for Ms. Schaff or Ms. Hodges? Next, we have Deacon Jim Meyer from the Archdiocese. Following his testimony, I'll call on Senator Laurie to make a motion. Welcome to the committee, Deacon Meyer, and we're pleased to have your testimony. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Deacon Jim Meyer. I'm one of the deacons at the Cathedral of St. Paul, and I come at this issue, this bill, this question from a couple of different perspectives. One perspective is my career in business. I had a 25-year career in business before coming to the Cathedral, half as a CPA in public accounting and half as a financial planner. And the second is, of course, the ministry that we do with folks that come to the Cathedral steps every day needing assistance. And they come to our doors every day needing lots of different kinds of help, but part of what they need is financial assistance. And what's happened to us in the last couple of years particularly is we've become overwhelmed with the requests for assistance. And many of them come from needs for rental help. They've had something come up in their life that they're unable to pay this month's rent or this month's utility bill, and they've been served with an eviction notice. And they're living so close to the line of making it or not making it that one unexpected bill, a repair bill, a medical bill of something that they hadn't planned on, pushes them way back in the other direction. I also serve as a chaplain for a Catholic Charities homeless shelter for alcoholic men, and I hear their stories that they tell me as well, similar in nature, that they live so close to the line that one unexpected thing pushes them back into a difficult situation. Just in the last several weeks, we had a particular instance with a young family, mother and father, aged late 20s. They have five children, ranging in age from 13 down to 1.5. And it was only in the last, since the first of the year, that they both passed their GED and now have their high school education. We're trying to help them along, move them forward a little bit. They're now enrolled. She's enrolled in a medical assistance program. He's enrolled in a criminal justice program. They're beginning to make some traction on moving out of the situation that they've grown up in. But she called me just a month ago and said, the refrigerator went out. We don't have the money to pay for it. What do we do? And she had their lease out. She said, what does this clause mean in my lease? And she read it to me, and there was a specific exclusion in the lease from the landlord having any responsibility of repairs to the refrigerator. And she didn't understand what the wording was. She says, Deacon, I didn't know what that meant. When we signed it, I don't understand. So this whole question of financial literacy came right to the forefront with her about how to deal with that. I found out in the last several weeks that they're driving around without car insurance. I said to them, of course, you know, it's illegal to drive without car insurance. You need car insurance. She said, Deacon, if we have car insurance, if I have to spend the money for car insurance, I don't have any money for books, I can't go to school, and I don't know how to buy car insurance. I don't know what all those rules and all those terms mean. I need help with that. So they're right there. They're moving along ahead, but any one thing that happens to them will push them way back in the other direction, almost to a point where they can't get back to where they are today. So the whole question of training in literacy and financial matters and assisting people in accumulating some funds for these kinds of emergencies is a critical thing. So wholeheartedly support this legislation in that regard.
Thank you, Deacon Meyer, for your testimony. Any questions or comments? Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, not for Deacon Meyer, but just wanted to discuss for just a minute. I asked Senator Jungbauer, he doesn't mind the bill coming to my committee. I wanted to ask about that because your staff asked as well. This bill, the underlying policies of what the task force does, our jurisdiction of my committee, I don't know. I was so involved in the Poverty Commission. I appreciate Senator Jungbauer's work so much. I think we're interested in the results of the task force rather than it, and I don't see anything here, but I wanted to raise with Senator Laurie because, I mean, there had been a lot of sensitivity yesterday about, well, should we have reviewed that other bill a third time? And so I wonder, do you have any sense of whether we should be reviewing this? I'm too close to it to have a sense of whether we should be or not. I don't feel a pressing need, and Senator Jungbauer said he's ready either way, but.
Senator Laurie, do you?
Chair, Senator Marty, I think that we've heard these issues quite a bit and discussed them quite a bit in committee. I don't think that there's any pressing need to bring it through that. Good.
That's fine. I just wanted to make it clear because I'm feeling, is it because I've been paying attention to this for the last 2 years and Senator Jungbauer put together a good bill that basically follows up on what the Poverty Commission did. So, okay, I just wanted to ask before you make the referral. Okay.
Is there anyone else who wishes to speak either in support or in opposition to Senate File 1770? Thank you, Deacon Meyer. Seeing none, Senator Laurie.
Thank you, Senator Rust. And I would just like to, before moving the bill, congratulate Ms. Hodges on her making it several steps up the ladder of out of poverty, and to congratulate you on your making it up and also bringing your children up. These are significant successes, and also thank you for bringing your story to the committee so that we can better understand. And with that, I would move that Senate File 1770, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Rules.
You've heard Senator Laurie's motion that Senate File 1770 is amended, be recommended to pass, and referred to the Committee on Rules. Discussion of that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Jungbauer. Senator Metzen. Senator Metzen brings us Senate File 2167. Members will note that we also have two bills from Senator Saltzman following the presentation of Senate File 2167. Those two bills are the provisions of them, we can ask a little bit more about that later, are within Senate File 2167. And Senator Saltzman has asked that they travel separately as well as within your bill, Senator Metzen, and I just assumed you had no objection to that either.
That is correct.
And favorable action on these three bills will send them to the Committee on Finance.
Okay, thank you very much.
Senator Metzen, welcome to
thank
the
you, Madam
committee.
Chair and members of the this committee. I think we've got a very good jobs bill here, and we're mainly before you because of the local assessments and the permitting extensions and the rulemaking, some rulemaking authority. But if I could take just a minute, because it's all kind of, I think, pertains to your committee, the whole bill.
Yeah, if you could briefly describe the bill,
briefly,
and then
yes,
we'll focus on the provisions that are within our jurisdiction.
Okay, yeah. I think with that in mind, I think I'll call up immediately instead of going through. Let me just say that this is about 80% of the jobs bill that we passed in this last session on a bipartisan basis, 55-11. The minority leader of the Senate is on the bill, and he's still on the bill. So that's just a little bit of the background. It creates a lot of jobs, but we're here to talk about the local assessments provision, the permitting extension, and the rulemaking authority. So I'll call up some people that can explain those provisions better than I can, Mr. Herman. Then we got Paul Cassidy. Going to speak
on the part of the bill that deals with the insurance companies and a, and then we have Jeff Nelson.
We can invite those folks forward to briefly describe the bill, and then as you wish, Senator Metzen, and then we will turn to the issues that are here. We do not need a lengthy policy discussion from
your witness. That's correct. I understand that. But this bill is an attempt to create jobs in Minnesota. We've took into account some of the situations where the governor was not on board with some of the provisions. We've taken those out. The House did not pass this legislation last year for, I don't know, for whatever reasons. I'm not going to guess about those. But a couple of weeks ago, as you read in the paper, they've got a bill that's essentially not at about 70 to 80% of what we're trying to accomplish today. So they're on board. Senator Bach has been very helpful with the administration working with some of those people. And briefly, what it does, it puts people back to work, architects, engineers, contractors, and the tradespeople. There are 250,000 people in Minnesota collecting unemployment. 50% of all of our tradespeople are on the bench, not working. This deals some of the specifics as a historic rehab tax credits for actually these buildings are all over the state of Minnesota. We think we've got to give encouragement, incentives to keep these historic buildings up and not destroy them. Once they're knocked down, they're gone forever. Some changes in the TIF legislation, provisions for local entities to do green and sustainable projects in their communities, and it deals with extension of permits. Once you get a permit extension, sometimes it takes more than a year to get these projects going, and then you got to go back through the whole process. It's a time intensive. It's very costly again. So that's another provision of the bill. So we've got the angel investors and the Capco provision in here. The governor is on board with the angels part of it. Capco is another provision that Mr. Cassidy will visit with this committee about. It's another tool in the toolbox to get buildings built. So with that, I think, John, did you wish to visit with the committee first of all?
Mr. Herman, if you would like to speak, please identify yourself for the record.
Chairman Rest, members of the committee, my name is John Herman. I'm a partner in the real estate and development group at Fagery & Benson. I'm the head of the group's land use and permitting for development projects practice. And I have had, since I used to be more of a fixture at the Capitol, I guess a fairly substantial real estate practice that's kept me away most of the time. I can echo in a few sentences what Senator Metzen has said. There's almost no development activity occurring today in vertical construction, even in the areas where there's material market demand and where there are developers who in a more traditional period of time would have experienced no problem with financing and with development. And so many of the provisions of the bill are intended to deal with those kind of issues. It's not a perfect solution. The bill last year had even more help. But I think that the primary problem that projects are facing today is the breakdown of the credit market and the inability to obtain financing for the projects. And so what that means is that in order to make projects viable, you need to either fill the equity gap or you have to provide more assistance because the lending community is stuck at a 50 to 60% lending level. I think that the cities are all very accomplished at recapturing excess tax increment if projects turn out better than the level of assistance they need to provide. It's a regular part of all of the deals I do, and I do think that the duration extensions for this short period the ability to pool across districts, and the ability to use TIF for some projects which traditionally we would have excluded because they're strictly economic development, not in a blighted area, et cetera, like this so-called compact district, will encourage some projects to happen. And the cities, I think, will be parsimonious about getting that money back if at the end of the day you sell the property and you make an out-of-market internal rate of return. On the permitting, let me just say some cities have responded to this problem. Many ordinances had a one-year permit with a one-year administrative extension. We're kind of at the end of that two-year period. I frankly think that it would be good to extend the permits for projects that have been in the pipeline for 2 years from this point. A couple of cities have actually enacted ordinances where their permits can be extended longer. What this would do is simply do it across the board and just say if you've got a project that has an expiring entitlement, you can extend it. Just before the hearing, the League said to me that they had some concerns about
they'll be testifying later.
Rest of the language, mm-hmm. and we'd be happy to work with them on that. But, you know, entitlements are often difficult to obtain on these larger scale projects, and to have to go back through that process full-blown can be a material expense for these project proponents in a time when, frankly, most of them are very, very starved for equity. So I hope the committee will consider those parts. I think those are the ones that deal most with local government. I'm happy to answer any other
questions for Mr. Herman. Mr. Cassidy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Paul Cassidy with the law firm of Leonard Street and Dinard. I'm here to speak to the provisions in Senator Metzen's bill regarding the Small Business Investment Act in Article 4. The Small Business Investment Act has been around the Capitol for a couple of years now. It proposes to incent insurers to make investments in Minnesota to create pools of capital for venture capital for firms, small businesses of 100 employees or less who are in need of capital. I think we're all here in this room today with regard to Senator Metzen's bill because there's a lack of capital in the marketplace. This would incent insurers who do business in Minnesota to keep that capital at home. In exchange for that, they'd receive a tax credit, 80% tax credit, over the course of 4 years. The bills in your committee today, Madam Chair, I think Article 4, Subdivision 10, there's a rulemaking exception. The bill prescribes...
Well, Section as Subdivision 11.
Correct, sorry.
Rulemaking, it's an exception for rulemaking, Subdivision 10, and then Subdivision 11, report to the governor and the legislature. Senator Metzen, I note that you have an amendment.
Conservation.
Does it deal with any, because I'm going to make a suggestion if it deals with anything in Article 4, does it?
I don't believe so.
I don't believe it does.
Probably not.
And we're kind of getting to the nitty-gritty here, but I,
sure.
But okay. On line 26, I'm looking for you say that there must be an annual report, and then you have it dealing with in Clause 3, the cumulative amount that each Minnesota business investment company has invested as of the beginning of 2011. However, you don't indicate when the report would need to be made to the governor and chairs and ranking minority members, and I think we probably need a date there, and we usually don't want it to be obviously the beginning of the year because that forces people to be working at the end of the year around holidays, et cetera. And so we usually move it further along in the legislative session. And Mr. Botter, and I wonder if you can tell us or give us an annual report. If you're looking at 2919, provide us with an amendment in a moment or so to when that report would be due. Senator Metzen, do you have any objection to that being drafted?
Not at all.
Okay.
Thank
we'll,
you for the
We'll help. Get back to that after we deal with some of the other things. But since you drew our attention to Article 4, we will look at that. Now, there are other provisions in the bill that we are concerned about with regard to the jurisdiction of this committee.
What's the Madam Chair?
Do you have anything more to say? We really don't need to know the content of Article 4, just what it applies to here.
Madam Chair, with
Mr. Cassidy, anything else?
With regard to the report, what I would suggest is that to be consistent with the ANGEL credit, which is in the other section of the bill, March 15th is the date in there that they need to report back to the legislature, the
okay.
Department of Economic Development. So I would suggest March 15th if that's appropriate.
Okay, anything else? Then we'll hear from Mr. Jeffrey Nelson.
Good morning. My name is Jeff Nelson. I'm with the Office of Business Finance within the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development. I'm here to talk both about the CAPCO program and the Angel Investment Program, both of which are within Senator Metzen's bills.
Okay. Very briefly, just describe them because the content belongs in the Tax Committee and the Finance Committee,
certainly.
And not here.
As Mr. Cassidy was explaining, the CAPCO bill is a means of providing capital for small emerging businesses. The capital derives from insurance companies who then invest in small business investment companies. In essence, these are venture capital companies, which then, per this bill, are to invest that money in small emerging businesses within Minnesota. The angel investment portion of Senator Metzen's bill, as well as Senator Saltzman's bill, is another means of providing capital for small emerging businesses. In this bill, it provides an incentive for angel investors who are accredited investors in the state of Minnesota to invest within, again, small emerging businesses. It provides for a 25% tax credit for such investments. Both bills, both the CAPCO bill and the angel investment bill, have provisions in them that require the department to provide applications, online applications, by August 1st. Therefore, we've requested the senators to include in their bill a rulemaking exception so that the department would be able to have those applications available online within the due dates of the bills.
And that rulemaking exception is for members to look at is on, let's see, where was it? It's on 2914, page 29 in the bill, line 14. That would have been and that's also in Article 4, that would have been something that we would have come back to anyway. So.
And, Madam Chair, it's also on line 1524.
On 1524, and we've had an explanation about why the rulemaking exception is asked for, and then the report there, Mr. Cassidy pointed out for March 15th, making that same thing for the other annual report. Is anybody wants to ask a question about the rulemaking exception in either one of those articles? Seeing none, thank you very much. We will be taking a look at the Section 1, Subdivision 13, the procurement issues, which is under the jurisdiction of this committee, as well as the permitting. But we also have Mr. Noel Levine and Mr. John Sullivan, who wish to testify.
Yeah.
And they are well, they'll identify
these are,
themselves.
Madam Chair, community development agencies in from Carver County and Economic Development Partnership in Wright County. And they explain.
If those folks are available, if they would come forward, please, we'll take their testimony and then we'll return to a discussion of the procurement and the permitting and hear from the League of Cities.
Good morning, Madam.
We do still have, Senator Metzen, we still do have an amendment from you, I believe, that you wanted the committee to.
That's a clarification amendment.
That you wanted the committee to discuss. We'll come back to that, and you can explain it, and then we can have somebody offer it. Who would like to go first?
I can go first, Madam Chair. I'm
Welcome
Noel
to the
Levine.
Committee. If you, Mr. Levine, if you would identify yourself for the record.
Okay, Madam Chair. I'm Noel Levine, Director of the Wright County Economic Development Partnership, and I'm also President of the Minnesota Association of Professional County Economic Developers.
Thank you.
We're strongly in favor, both myself as a working economic development professional and also the Minnesota Association of Professional County Economic Developers in favor of doing things like getting angel investment tax credits to stimulate capital investment in small business and business expansion in Minnesota. I've had experience working with a couple of companies where that's been a very vital part of their growth. When I closed on a deal in April, they had 4 employees. Right now they have 16 employees. By April, they expect to have 20 employees. Some of these companies have really good products. They're rapidly expanding, so the money works well. From that kind of source, because they're really not bankable. They really do need private equity investment. So I realize this is a rules-making committee, and I'm not really sure. You don't really want me to tell you anecdotal stories, right?
No, we don't need anecdotes. No,
they're good stories, right?
Yes, they're good stories.
What we're giving is the commissioner rulemaking authority to set in place the or generally, rulemaking authority sets in place the parameters for a program moving forward without having to put the language into the statutes. Often that involves dates or requirements or so forth. And what Senator Metzen is asking for with regard, and the departments with regard to the implementing this program, is an exception to rulemaking in order to implement it. And they explain that putting an online application by August 15th, that going through the rulemaking process to do that would be burdensome, overly burdensome. And so they're asking for an exception to rulemaking rather than permitting rulemaking. And it goes both ways. It's but that's what the rulemaking talks about. And rules have the effect of law. Mr. Sullivan?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Sullivan. I'm the Economic Development Director for Carver County. Thank you for letting me have the opportunity to speak today. I, too, as Mr. Levine stated, am in favor of all aspects of this bill, specifically the Small Business Investment Tax Credit Article 2, which the timing, in my opinion, couldn't be better based on some of the things we're involved in. I'm also part of the Economic Development Association of Minnesota as well. And I was told by some of the members of the committee, if I was to testify today, to please tell everybody that they are also in support of this. Us economic developers, we're always about trying to provide capital for businesses and adding more things to the tool bag, if you will. And I think this entire bill does a fabulous job at doing this. When I mentioned the timing earlier, I think it's important to understand that I also serve on a committee through the Biobusiness Alliance of Minnesota to try to attract venture capital to Minnesota. And we started this about a year and a half ago, and we had nothing. And now we've really come a long ways, and we've got people that want to invest and invest in Minnesota. So I think this bill would really help that situation, and I think it's well written, and I think it's an improvement from last year. So thank you. If you have any questions,
thank you, Mr. Levine, Mr. Sullivan. Is there are there questions or comments for either of these gentlemen?
Madam Chair,
Senator Roebling.
I'm still a little confused, and maybe an antidote would help me. I'm trying to figure out if a business comes and you're trying to recruit it to develop in your community, could you just help me understand how the provisions in here would help give you tools to assist them and encourage them to build in Minnesota?
Mr. Sullivan or Mr. Levine, either one.
Yeah, I'd be glad to address that, Madam Chair and Senator Roebling. What ends up happening is when a company has a really good idea and they're innovative and they're a high-tech company, like this one company I'm helping is building the latest state-of-the-art wireless devices, security devices for the U.S. State Department and the U.S. Navy. It'd be a real shame if we couldn't keep them in Minnesota because we couldn't get enough equity investors. The banks can only help out a little bit. The revolving loan fund and other government money we have can only help out a little bit because so much of what they need is doesn't have assets to back it up. If we have to use equity investors are willing to just take their intelligence, their patents for assets, and the banks and governments really typically can't do that. So it's real important that equity investors are encouraged to invest. There's a lot of people with money out there, but there's so much risk right now, and there's a lot of risk in investing in a startup, early stage startup, even if they're a 2 or 3 year old company, because they're growing so fast, because they don't have assets to bank or that are bankable. That the equity investors really need some kind of a stimulus to encourage them. So we have angel investors investing now, that's true. But if there was a tax credit, we'd have a lot more interest.
Okay, thank you.
Let me just, Senator Roebling.
Senator Metzen.
To my knowledge, I think all of the contiguous states have this one form or another, either the CAPCO or angel investors, and we are losing a lot of companies because we don't have that tool. So we're competing with North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, Wisconsin, Ohio, and many other states that have these provisions, and we don't, and we are losing valuable employment because of not having these provisions.
Senator Marty?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, what about the House research thing that said that Wisconsin and other states are way behind us in venture capital, and which was suggesting the opposite of what you've just been saying about how we're way behind?
Well, I don't know where that report came from. I don't believe that. All the people I've talked to, everybody I've listened to, I've carried this for 2 years, and that's probably when they didn't pass it last year, and they're on board this year. I don't know the reasons, but I don't believe that. We need these tools.
I was there when Joel Michaels gave that report.
And Mr. Levine. You need to go through the chair when you speak.
Yeah.
I'm saying, Madam Chair, may I say something?
Oh, yes, you may. You just need to go through the chair so that the tape will know by my recognizing you who is speaking.
Okay. Yeah, please excuse my enthusiasm.
That's okay. Mr. Levine.
So I was there when Jay Hare of the PricewaterhouseCooper refuted Joel Michaels' report. Joel Michaels' report just reported on the venture capital, report on angel investor investments, because that's a different kind of a investment pool, and it doesn't show up on the data. There's like a time lag. By the time companies are eligible for venture capital, they're probably in their fifth or sixth year of development, and they're multi-million dollar needs, and it's no longer the same level playing field as angel investor tax credit. The second thing that Jay Hare of PricewaterhouseCooper refuted Joel Michaels' report was that it doesn't measure the trends. We do have a much larger pool of capital in Minnesota than in Wisconsin, but the trend is that there's less and less money going into venture capital on a percentage basis than is happening in the neighboring states. So something's happening in the Minnesota economy that is slowing down our trend.
Madam Chair.
Senator Marty.
Sir, Mr. Michaels' report, I mean, I was not talking about the angel investor part. I was talking about the venture capital portion. And, again, Ron, I haven't looked at his report yet. I'm just curious because I'm trying to find out why he's saying we're way ahead of Wisconsin and the other states in that. And you mentioned that the Price Waterhouse guy said about angel investment credits. I'm just curious where what he said that I'm going to look at the report, but what he said about the venture capital, because that's where we are being told by this that we have to put this $100 million into this thing that I know several economists have called a scam, because we are so far behind in venture capital. And now I keep hearing from Joel Michael, who is he's been on the tax committee staff in the House for 20, 30 years, and his numbers are pretty sound usually. So I guess I'm wondering what you're saying about the venture capital portion.
I will. Thank you, Senator Morty. We will take questions from the members on any part of the bill, but I would remind you that
I'll focus on that text. I just wondered because he said it. Ma'am.
This is you're going beyond our jurisdiction with regard to that. Not that the point is not important, but when members bring their bills here, they bring people to speak to the issues that are part of our jurisdiction rather than the broader policy thing. So I just remind members as well as testifiers about that once again.
Madam Chair, I agree. I will spend most of the time in tax committee. I was just wondering because I was hearing that said here, and I thought I was really puzzled by that being so different from what we were hearing from the House.
Senator Metzen, what I would encourage you to do is, since you know that that issue is going to come up when the bill gets to the tax committee, to be prepared to discuss it there rather than full-blown discussion of it in this committee.
I agree, Madam Chair. As you know, I chaired this committee for a while, and you focus on what's in this committee. And Senator Marty, I'm a little surprised that we need more tools in the toolbox, but he'll get his chance in the tax committee to speak against this jobs bill if he so desires.
Okay. We have Senator Metzen has brought to us the A4 amendment, and it looks like to me it is part of the jurisdiction of this committee.
Madam Chair, this is brought to me by it's a clarification language brought to me by the Solar Energy Industries Association, and Lynn Hinkle can explain briefly why this kind of clarifies and gets this into
We'll hear from Mr. Hinkle about this amendment, and then we'll ask, let's get it before us. Senator Lori moves the A4 amendment, and now we'll have discussion on it.
Good morning.
Welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself, please, for the record, and we do not have your name. So if you would spell your name for us, please.
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lynn Hinkle, H-I-N-K-L-E, first name Lynn, L-Y-N-N. And as Senator Metzen indicated, I'm here speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Solar Energy Industry Association. We're an association that's made up of solar installers, electrical contracting companies that have taken on solar installation as a part of their work, manufacturing companies, then a significant supply chain that exists in Minnesota, and a number of folks who have just joined because they support solar in Minnesota. I'm here today to speak in support of the general provisions of...
We're dealing specifically with this A4 amendment, if you will.
All right.
Wait, let me just say, Madam Chair, that...
Senator Metzen.
We think they're included in our language now, but this just kind of really makes sure that this component is there. We don't want to get any court battles or anything later on, and this is simply a clarification the way I understand it. Is that
That's
correct?
That's correct.
Mr. Hinkle?
So I can speak directly to the provisions of the amendment. As Senator Metzen has indicated, our concern is that we both enable the largest number of jurisdictions to engage in this program, and the provision that you see in front of you that includes counties' abilities to participate in on-site energy conservation and renewable energy generation improvements is critical to that. If it were not for that, counties would not be able to participate or engage in developing these assessment districts that could facilitate significant resource flow into development of energy conservation and renewable energy projects. The other provisions are simply to explicitly identify the inclusion of renewable energy along with energy conservation and energy efficiency in the development of these projects. So it does both things. It enlarges the number of jurisdictions that would have this capacity, and it increases the number of project types that would be eligible for this kind of financing.
Okay, we have Senator Lori's motion to adopt this amendment. Senator Roebling, a comment or question for Mr. Hinkle or Senator Metzen?
Thank you. Senator Metzen, I'm trying to understand these assessment districts. In the bill now without the amendment, it's available for basically cities, correct? And so this would expand it to counties. Now, if a city were going to, or city or county, were going to do a project with one of their buildings, is that what we're talking about? They're going to kind of refurbish it so that it's more energy efficient. Would their whole city be an assessment district, or their whole county, or who are you assessing? I'm puzzled about this for those improvements.
Senator Metzen or Mr. Herman
will look.
Mr. Herman?
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, these are assessments that are available upon the petition for private building owners to provide a method for financing for energy improvements and conservation improvements in their private building. Minnesota has for a long time provided, obviously, special assessments for municipalities for general public improvements. But we've also had a category of types of improvements in which there's substantial public interest, where we have allowed individual property owners to petition their local governmental unit to assess them over a period of time to install improvements in the private buildings. For example, skyways have been covered by this for probably 25 or 30 years. Installation of fire protection systems in existing buildings. And several years, 4 or 5 years ago, the legislature added water quality improvements because of the extreme cost of doing ponding and various other kinds of water quality improvements. So this is a device where an individual building owner could go to their city and say, put a small tax on my property over 20 years, and I will do an energy conservation improvement in my building with it, and I will repay the cost of it as part of my taxes. It's a totally voluntary program. Anyone whose property will be assessed has to petition for it, and the program would then have to be worked out with individual municipalities, or I actually have suggested to a number of people that this would be a perfect program to perhaps be done on an area-wide basis with the League of Municipalities providing the assistance to the communities to do it. And I think adding counties is an excellent idea. Frankly, that was an oversight when we drafted it. I have talked this over with dozens of economic development officials, people in the public finance area, and I would say it has been enthusiastically received, because the biggest single problem with investment in energy is that your payback is often at least 5 years and often 10 to 20 years. Finding financing in the commercial market for that is nearly impossible. And the financing would always be in that marketplace subordinate to your mortgage. And often if you're a commercial building owner, you have to have mortgagee consent in order to put that financing on. This would be a device to open up a whole new and economical method of financing. I think it would dramatically change the investment profile for businesses and indeed even homeowners in energy conservation improvements and renewable energy systems.
Mr. Herman, this amendment is simply clarifying something that...
The amendment just clarifies.
Yeah,
that's right.
We really just are talking
and
about the...
Madam Chair, it's not on the backs of the communities and the counties.
Yeah. Oh, Madam Chair, I was puzzled about this assessment district. I didn't know who was getting assessed. And so I thought if we're going to extend it to counties, yes. I need to find out who else is involved in this. But it's just
the property owner
who requests or petitions for it.
Madam Chair, and it's local control, again, you know, where the locals have to.
Is there anyone who wishes to speak in addition to the gentleman before us in support or in opposition to the A4 amendment? Seeing none, Senator Lurie renews his motion that Senate File 2167 be amended by the A4 amendment. Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted.
There
are two things now we want to focus on that are part of this committee for some explanation, and that is... section 1, Article 1, and that is the procurement part of the bill. You want to talk to us a little bit about the procurement provision with regard to the stimulus projects. Your section 1, which is that subdivision 13, says that the projects that were that are defined in section 9, and I'm looking right at the summary, are subject to the procurement process described in Minnesota Statute 16C16. If you just give us a brief overview of what that procurement process is. It's right at the it's the first section in the bill, Article 1. We get to look at procurement issues.
If there's anybody from the coalition that could answer that, Mr. Murphy, do you know, or Mr. Simmerhut, or...
Maybe council can give us a brief summary of what the procurement process is with regard to small businesses that's in Minnesota Statute 16C16.
I think
Mr.
this
Bodden?
Deals with the minorities and small to make sure that they're included is what I think.
If you just describe it. All right, Mr. Bodden.
Madam Chair and Senator Metzen, this is the small business procurement process used by the Department of Administration. Subdivision 1 in that section does set out a goal of at least 25% of the value of procurement should be reserved for small businesses, and it does provide a definition, actually refers to some rules that define small businesses, and also includes targeted groups within that definition, which would include groups where the commissioners found there's discrimination based on race, gender, or disability. It's basically a fairly comprehensive scheme. It's also applied to economically disadvantaged areas. And it essentially
and
what the bill is doing is
for is adherence to those.
It is borrowing the process that's used there and tying that into the definition of stimulus project that you see in Article 1, Section 9. I believe that's the way it's.
Hey, anybody have any members have any questions about Section 1, Subdivision 13, and its reference to Section 9 with regard to the rules under which procurement must be done relative to minorities and other kinds of contractors? Anybody have any questions about that? Okay. Then we move to the permitting issues that have been some concerns raised by the League of Minnesota Cities. Mr. Grauhofer, if you'd come before us, please, and direct us to the part of the bill that the League of Cities has some concerns with so that we can be looking at it as you explain it. So where should we look?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's Article 1, Section 10.
Article 1, Section 10.
I think that's on at least the version. I'm on page 9, beginning on line 16, I believe, if I'm looking at the same thing as you are.
Yes. And we have that. I'm sorry, would you just say again, and then I will ask you for some testimony. Where is it? Page 9, line 16, section 10?
Yes, correct.
Okay, starting there. If you would identify yourself, please, for the committee, and if you'd then speak to the concerns of the league.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Grundhofer, General Counsel with the League of Minnesota Cities. And I do want to reiterate at the beginning, we are generally supportive of most of the provisions of this bill. This Article 1, Section 10 provision, however, does concern us in several respects. First of all, as written, it sort of automatically extends a whole variety of permits and approvals that local governments may have in process right now. Despite the title of the section, in which talks about extension of certain economic development related permits, the wording of the actual section applies to, well, frankly, I don't know what it applies to. It talks about economic development projects, which isn't defined. It talks about subdivisions and references. Similarly, it references the Land Use Planning Act in Section 462. So arguably captures things like pending conditional use permits, pending subdivision approvals, pending interim use permits, pending sign permits. I'm not sure if that was intended, but as it's currently drafted, it is extremely broad and not very clear about its application. It is my understanding that most of our communities have as much incentive as anybody to see that a lot of these projects go forward, and they don't have any particular interest in putting a stop to this stuff or putting everything on hold. But they do want to be able to consider these projects on a case-by-case basis, taking into consideration the individual situations that may exist in their individual communities. And my understanding, again, is a lot of these permits are, in fact, being extended by local authority, which they already have authority to do. The problem with the sort of the automatic extension of this whole collection of permits is that we don't really know its impact on adjacent landowners, the impact on property in communities. We don't know its impact, for instance, on subdivision agreements that have already been entered into. We don't know its impact on security that may be in existence, letters of credit that are in existence in subdivision agreements that are out there. So I'm here to speak about concerns the way the language is currently drafted. We've had discussions with Senator Metzen and others about working on this provision, and we will. But right now we have some really serious concerns with the way it's put together.
Senator Metzen,
Madam
Chair,
thank you. I've
about
talked
how broad,
to the,
how broad these actually these waivers are.
I think the gentleman is correct. I've talked to the league a couple of times about this, and I will assure everybody in the league that we will tighten this up. And it is kind of broad, and I do recognize that. So we're going to work on that.
Mr. Grauhofer, does the league have any suggested language, even beginning in this committee? Because this is actually our jurisdiction.
We've talked about some suggested language, but the compromise language that we were discussing with some of the proponents wasn't acceptable at the time, so we do have to kind of continue to work on it. So I'm not ready to offer anything specifically today here, Madam Chair.
Senator Metzen, you do understand this is a a huge concern for the League of Cities, and if they have no language, I have no language, but the barn door needs to be maybe just a little bit less wide open here. Okay.
We did a half a door.
Half a door. Senator Metzen.
Yeah, I do. I guess this is one of those trust me ones. This is so important for Minnesota and the economy, and I've got another couple of stops, at least the tax committee, and to go, and I'd like to keep it on track if we could assure the committee members, and I can get to you individually or something, you know, with some language, but I would hope that we could keep moving, and I'm
okay, this is an issue of concern. It's not resolved at this point.
Yeah, and I understand
and,
that.
But it will be returned to.
Yeah.
But we wanted to get the discussion of it on the record.
I'm glad we had the discussion.
Senator Roebling and then Senator Lori.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I'm trying to understand if all of these developments have, permits have at one time been approved, and they – is it that they just haven't gotten underway yet? They need more time, partly because of the economy. I understand that. But why would there be such a big concern? They've already been approved. How long is the original permit period typically? Is it like 3 or 4 years old, or is it 1 or 2 years old? Why would another year be a big problem?
Mr. Runover, about the timing for permits?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it depends which permits you're talking about. A lot of subdivision approvals or subdivision activities are good for 2 years, so that, you know, there've already been, in essence, 2 years to kind of get this project moving. So we're talking about some additional time on top of that. The one thing I do want to reiterate, though, is that existing development agreements and subdivision agreements have all been signed, and the financing and the letters of credit are all kind of put in the context of the existing statutory framework. So it's simply to automatically extend this potentially handicaps and puts local governments at risk, because some of those letters of credit may or may not be extended automatically as well. So there's a variety of things we're concerned about because of that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
So if a developer could show you that these things are adequately addressed, I guess I don't want to see those poor developers go through that very lengthy and expensive process all over again to kickstart a project that we're maybe hoping happens, for economic development reasons. And so I would think that there could be some compromise if they can prove to you that they have their credit in order and that sort of thing, that they shouldn't have to go through the whole process all over again.
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, I do want to reiterate, most of our communities are as interested in as the developers are in making sure these things continue to go forward. They're the heartblood of what our communities are about. So they're trying to work, and they are working with developers even now in granting extensions. But it's kind of that constructive dialogue and discussion that actually where we think needs to be still allowed without it sort of happening just sort of automatically.
Okay, is there further discussion of this bill? We do have five other bills, and we don't have a whole lot of time. Senator Carlson.
We'll work it out.
Madam Chair, I had something that Mr. Herman mentioned before about the mortgage holders' consent on establishing the assessment. Is that with the mortgage holder's consent, or does this allow establishing an assessment without the mortgage holder's consent?
Well,
Senator Metzen?
The mortgage holders are the first lien on the property. And in order to trigger this, they would have to go to the lien holder, the first mortgage holder, and get their consent to add this on to the mortgage. It would be a second mortgage, so to speak. and but they're still in first place, so usually I would think they would agree, but maybe not always. But
Madam Chair, and
Senator Carlson,
Senator Metzen, is that correct that the mortgage holder, or would the assessment be the first to be paid?
No, the assessment would be first.
Would it?
No.
Oh, I was wrong for a change. I didn't think they'd get first position. Go ahead.
Very, very briefly.
But they'd have to agree, though, you know. So,
Mr. Herman.
I'm sure. No, the concept of 429 is that the owner of the property has to request it, and obviously they have to demonstrate that the project meets the criteria of the program, which would be set by the community, that it would save money over the period of the assessment financing. But it would not require the consent of other lien holders. It would be like your special assessments for street improvements or sidewalk improvements or any other kind of improvement that is of high public value.
We'd asked Mr. Bodern to give us an amendment dealing with the reporting language in Article 4 to make it consistent with the reporting language in Article 2. Mr. Bodern, do you have that amendment?
Madam Chair, on page 29, line 19, after report, insert by March 15th of each year, and at the end of line 19, after the, insert legislative, and on page 29, line 20, after committees, insert and divisions, and that'll clean up the reporting language.
We understand that. It's pretty boilerplate for this committee with regard to report. Senator Lurie moves that amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion on the issues before this committee with regard to Senate File 2167? Seeing none, Senator Lurie moves that Senate File 2167 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Finance. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much,
Thank
Senator
very
Metzen.
Much.
Senator Saltzman. Senator Saltzman has two bills that I hope we can act on very quickly. They are bills that are contained inside, as I mentioned at the beginning, contained inside of Senator Metzen's bill. Besides their being there, she asked that they also be forwarded to the Committee on Finance as separate vehicles. I don't believe that we need very much discussion. We just need a couple of motions here. Senator Carlson moves that Senate file. Senator Saltzman,
Yes, sir. Just one small amendment, I believe, Madam Chair, to be consistent with the action you just took regarding Senate File 2306, the Minnesota Business Investment Company Credit Establishment, would need to have the date inserted of March 15th, I believe, to be consistent.
Would you direct us to where that is?
That would be, Mr. Bonner, do you happen to, I think on my copy here it is Subdivision 10. Excuse me.
Which section?
Subdivision 11 of section.
It's on page 10.
Mr. Bodern.
Madam Chair, on page 10, on line 32, after report, you can insert by March 15th of each year, and at the end of that line, insert
Mr.
legislative.
Mr. Bodern, now, on the first engrossment, I don't have a page 10.
Madam Chair, I'm looking at Senate File 2306. Have I got that wrong?
Oh, we were looking at 2307.
Beg your pardon.
To start with. Or that's the one I picked up first and what she was looking at.
Madam Chair, the report I see on that in that bill is on page 7.
Yes.
And I think that already has a March 15th date. Yeah. I can use a little bit of cleanup. On page 7, line 14, before committees, insert legislative, and after committees, insert and divisions. And I think it should work that way.
And that would bring it into line with the amendment we made to Senator Metzen's bill?
Yes.
Senator Lurie moves that oral amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. So we have Senate File 2307. The content has been discussed. Senator Carlson moves that Senate File 2307 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Then we have Senate File 2306. We need a similar amendment to bring it into to comply, to match up with Senator Metzen's bill, and that would be on page 10. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, on page 10, line 32, after report, insert by March 15th of each year. At the end of line 32, insert legislative. And on page 10, line 33, after committees, insert and divisions.
Any Senator Lurie moves that oral amendment? Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Lurie further moves that Senate File 2306, as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Finance. All who are in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Senator Rust, welcome to the committee. We'll take up Senate File 2413.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 2413 will need to go to the Committee on Commerce and eventually the Committee on Judiciary if it's acted on favorably here. What it does is it is permissive language that will allow municipalities to permit full-time permanent firefighters to solicit charitable contributions from motorists while they're on duty. It is a practice that is undertaken now in cities across the country by firefighters in a program called Fill the Boot. And in Minnesota and in other and in municipalities, notably the city of Minneapolis and others, but notably the city of Minneapolis, firefighters have been working with a particular charity, the Muscular Dystrophy Association, to do that. The city attorney raised some questions about not in opposition to the program, but whether the city had specific and statutory authority to actually allow that to happen. And so that is what this bill does, clarifying that indeed they do have the authority to do that if they choose. And the provisions would be that the organization, whichever one it is, and the bill is not specifically to the Muscular Dystrophy Association, but whoever it is, has to be a 501c3, that the solicitation doesn't occur for more than 3 days in a year, whether or not it's consecutive, and that the charitable organization provides to the municipality a certificate of liability insurance. It's pretty straightforward, and I have with me representatives from the charities and from the firefighters to speak to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Thornburg. I'm president of the Minnesota Professional Firefighters, and we've asked Senator Rust to author this bill. Firefighters have had a longstanding relationship with the Muscular Dystrophy Association going back more than 55 years. We have been doing on-duty on the street, fill the boot across the United States for more than 55 years. In Minnesota, we've only been doing this for about 3 to 4 years. It's been very successful. The on-duty fill the boot has far outgained any other attempts that we've had at fundraising for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. In Minneapolis, the department that I work for, we started this 3 years ago, and we were able to raise $36,000 in our first year. Our second year, that jumped to more than $65,000, and last year it went up to $91,000. So the program has proven to be successful. Obviously, by the jumps in numbers, you can see that the public has supported. We get many compliments on the street thanking the firefighters for doing what we're doing when we're doing it. We've also enjoyed the support of the mayor and the city council in Minneapolis. However, one of the, as Senator Rest said, one of the city attorneys had some concerns about it. I also, as president of the state association, 2 years ago, the mayor of Duluth had asked us specifically, is there a state law that we could point to or an attorney general's ruling that we could point to that basically would allow us or allow the cities to allow us to do this? That didn't exist, so I promised them that I would try to make that happen. And as Senator Rest said, this is permissive. Each city, of course, would get to decide on their own if they wanted to allow their firefighters to do this. If they didn't want us to do it, we certainly wouldn't, obviously. We wouldn't want to lose our jobs over something like this. But basically, this just, I think, gives the cities cover to let them decide whether or not they can do this or not. And I'll stand for any questions.
And, Mr. Chairman, I point out, too, that we look to what happens in other states, since this is a kind of a nationwide activity, and our bill is modeled after the laws that were passed with regard to this in California, Texas, and Florida.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Mr. Thornburg, one of the questions I had upon first reading it was whether this – why it would apply only to professional firefighters, and then I realized, I think – that for our volunteers, there is no prohibition against them doing this. It's that there isn't specific authority for people, for professional firefighters while on duty to do this, and that's really the issue we're trying to get at. So there is no prohibition. Volunteer firefighters, which are most of my communities are comprised of, would be able to do this without any prohibition today in law, and that's why this is geared toward the professional side, correct?
Absolutely, Senator. We would actually hope that volunteer departments, and we'd encourage them to also partake
right.
in this. I represent the career firefighters throughout the state, and we do have the partnership with the International Association of Firefighters and the Muscular Dystrophy Association, so that's why it's brought forward in this manner.
Any other questions of members? Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Thornburg, just was curious when I was first reading this. It was thinking firefighters, what they do, pull over a motorist. This is when you're in the firehouse and you're lots of time waiting between calls. You just stand in front of the station. That's where you meet motorists? Or, I mean, how does this work? I was just, I can
I'd be happy to
Mr.
explain.
Thornburg.
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, What we do is we generally set up 3 days, and the reason we set up 3 days is because there's generally three shifts on most career departments. And each shift will go out for a couple hours each day. Typically, we will pick a busy intersection where there's stoplights, where the motorists will be stopped. We obviously don't harass anybody or anything like that. We stand there with a sign and with a boot that makes it very obvious what we're doing there. And if the motorists hold out some money to put in our boot, we'll walk up to them and put it in. We try very hard to not obstruct traffic. We don't stand in the middle of traffic. We stay on out of the roadways as much as possible, except when we run out to get that dollar. So that's how we typically do it, Senator.
And Mr. Thornburg, I hope this is an extra boot that would not be needed by one of your fighters if he got on a call.
Absolutely.
Okay. This is
Mr. Chairman and Senator Marty, the firefighters are respond to calls, obviously, if one would come during this particular charitable activity.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we do stay in service the entire time. We respond to calls. Actually, it's been shown, in, at least in Minneapolis, that our response time improves because we're already out and on the truck, and we don't have to go to the truck. And also, in career departments, we generally work 24-hour shifts, and we do have some downtime in that shifts, and this is what the firefighters choose to spend that downtime doing rather than, you know, sitting around the fire station.
Okay. Senator Roebling.
Thank you. And I have no objection to the activity. I just am curious that we need to explicitly permit it because it's not explicitly omitted. I mean, that's why I'm confused. I mean, I would think that cities would have the statutory authority normally to make that decision on their own without our approval.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Roebling, the firefighters and city councils and mayors thought they did have that. This is a response to, you know, the nuance brought up by a city attorney. And so we just want to clarify it and clarify that the charity has to have an insurance certificate for liability to carry it on in case the city attorneys were saying, well, who's liable if something happens, and this without bringing it into the city's liability. So I think it's a fairly minor provision moving forward, but everyone involved seemed to be much more comfortable with having the specific authority, permissive authority, obviously, put in the statute.
So it would be, Senator Rust, it would be something along the lines of, while this professional firefighter is on duty out in the street carrying a boot, should something happen and create a liability, the charity is taking on that liability rather than the city, and that this is clarifying that. Is that a correct interpretation of the purpose of this?
Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, that's correct. That's certainly that piece of the bill. And then, as I stated earlier, I believe that some cities are just looking for a statutory allowing them to just say, yes, you can do this.
Or no.
They don't have to
do it. Yes. It's permissive.
Mr. Chair, I see someone from the League of Cities would maybe like to comment. I'd welcome their input.
Yeah. Welcome to the committee. State your name again.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Grundhofer. Just to address that authority question for a second, actually the state auditor, in some previous discussions we've had with them and in some advice they've given to cities, has, you know, specifically said that unless you can find sort of specific authority for something like this, the use of on-call time and using firefighter uniforms for this purpose would be a improper expenditure of public funds. So we really, if you want to allow this, I would opine that you'd need to have some specific statutory authority for
which
that.
Which the bill does.
Which this does. I would question whether, for instance, non-volunteers would have the authority absent something like this. But as I think this is needed.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Rust.
I would move that Senate File 2413 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Commerce.
Well, we will take that up in a minute. Well, I do have a question because, Mr. Grundhofer, you said that you question whether volunteer firefighters would have the ability to do this without something like this, and this does not create something for volunteer fire associations. And so maybe by doing this we will be prohibiting volunteer.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I was just talking about that in the audience, and sort of almost by negative implication you could arrive at that conclusion. I'm not saying it's 100% sure, but it does give me some pause.
Senator Rust. Senator Rest, do you have any thoughts?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer. And that, you know, that issue had not been brought up to me before. Yeah.
Senator Marty and then Senator Perry. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, on this issue, it looked to me when Senator Rest started moving the bill, I was thinking, I can picture this will be back in a year or two to allow it for volunteer firefighters, and then in a few more years, perhaps, to do more than 3 days or more than one charitable organization, none of which I have any problem with. I'm just saying that the way we do it, we'll let this little thing in here. And then because it explicitly says that, I think every city attorney is going to say what Mr. Grundhofer is saying, that, we can't do it for volunteers. We can't do it for more than this. And so if we want to fix it, we ought to fix it now rather than come back again.
Senator Rust?
Mr. Chairman, I wouldn't be adverse to having an amendment that included volunteer firefighters, but I don't want to extend it to more than one charity, mm-hmm. nor do I want to extend it to more than three days.
I think that's
purpose. Vastly different. So I have some other testifiers. If we could
Senate
have an amendment that would add volunteer firefighters, and I am I'm very concerned about members' time, so if we could have our other testifiers and question them, and then act on an amendment that would include volunteer fire departments.
Okay. And then
Mr.
Senator
Chair,
thank
you, Mr. Yeah. Chair, and Senator Rest. I guess there's three words that concern me about this, and believe me, I always drop money in the boot, and so do my grandkids. But while on duty, that concerns me because while on duty, they're covered by their cities, their insurances, and by adding those three words, if there is an incident, how do you separate that? I mean, there's a difference between a volunteer person holding a boot or holding a can to raise money. But I think that concerns me because are we not putting the taxpayers in a position of liability with those three words while on duty? Because they are actually on duty and being paid and compensated by their communities.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that that's what the what Clause 3 is all about.
Yes, it transfers that liability from the city
at least to that $1.5 million
for that point in time to the charity that has to carry this and actually names the city as an additional beneficiary in the insurance policy. And then, Senator Rust, you wanted to move on with your...
Yes, if we could have our
Karen Abramson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Karen Abrahamson, and I'm with the Muscular Dystrophy Association. And so my presence here today, I just wanted to provide some insight as to why the support of the firefighters is so significant, not only for us as a national nonprofit, but for here in Minnesota. MDA was founded in 1950. We have 200-plus offices throughout the country, three here in Minnesota. Some of the services and how we spend the money that is raised involves through research, our clinic network system, support groups, summer camp, and assistance with durable medical equipment, repairs, and things of that nature. One important key component of all the work that firefighters across Minnesota do is the money that is generated stays local to Minnesota. And I just wanted to share with you a few things that what MDA is doing here in Minnesota as far as some funding that we do. We've funded over $1.7 million in research over the last 18 months, and in total over the last 5 years, about $3.2 million. Some of that research is garnered around the University of Minnesota, who was actually in 2008 chosen as a center of excellence for Duchenne muscular dystrophy research, and they are awarded an additional $1 million every year for their work on Duchenne that we provide based on the work that they've been doing. Some of the other services that I mentioned before, our clinic network system. We have three clinics here in Minnesota at Gillette Specialty Healthcare here in St. Paul, at the University of Minnesota, and also at SMDC in Duluth. And we funded about 164,000 in clinic visits for our families last year to ensure that they are able to see some clinical care and take care of their medical needs that way. We also fund a week-long summer camp program every June that's held near Maple Lake, Minnesota at Camp Courage. We send about 100 kids every year from the Minnesota area, It's completely cost-free for our families to go. In 2009, we spent $56,000 in the cost of that summer camp program. And additionally, over the last 5 years, have spent about $275,000 on that summer camp program. We also fund things like support groups for our families and with the various diseases they are diagnosed with. And in total, we provide on average about $400,000 that's spent here in Minnesota on all the various services, including some others like flu shots and things like that. So just in total, in summary, in the last 5 years, about $7.2 million has been funded by MDA right here in Minnesota. In 2009 alone, we spent about $2.54 million, of which we only actually generated $1.9 million through the various fundraisers that we've had. So an additional $640,000 has been put into the state by MDA because of some of the dynamic research and things that are happening here. So thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Abrahamson. Senator Roebling.
Ms. Abrahamson, so your organization has a general umbrella liability policy that you could easily meet these requirements in Section 3?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Abrahamson.
Yes, we do. Actually, it's something that we carry nationally. And we have, in the past years, also been able quite easily to add cities under our insurance as well. So, yes.
Thank you. Senator Rust, you had another testifier on the list here?
Yes. Very, very briefly. We are over our time. Don't read your whole testimony, please. Did you get the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lynn Tibbetts. I am a mother. I am one of the faces and families that Fill the Boot helps with our needs. My son, Jason, is 15 and has muscular dystrophy. He was diagnosed at age 3. He was able to walk until age 10. When he lost his ability to walk, he also lost a lot of what he was. He is this year's the Minnesota State Goodwill Ambassador for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. I can tell you wholeheartedly he would not be in this position if it wasn't for the funding that comes to the Muscular Dystrophy Association. The Fill the Boot campaign does wonders. And as a taxpayer, not even as a mother of a child diagnosed, I have no problem with taxpayer dollars paying for one of our firefighters, or many, to be on our street corners for 3 days. It does a lot of good for our state. The camp that Jason goes to is one where he just becomes one of many. At 15, he so doesn't want to be the kid in the wheelchair, and that's a place he can be safe and build confidence. I know, because of the Muscular Dystrophy Association and the great work the firefighters have done, specifically with my child, he will go on to become a productive citizen for the state. And I know there's a lot of technical points that you all have to work out, but as a parent, it gives me hope. That's what I get up every day, is that research that's done here at the U of M, they're going to find the cure, and my son will walk again. And if it takes filling boots or going into traffic, we can get there. We can figure out the few concerns that I hear. And as a taxpayer and a mother, I'm biased, obviously, I think we can find a solution where the firefighters, even though they're being paid with taxpayer dollars, they want to be out there. They think of this as part of their job. I'm honored that they've picked our charity, and I hope you guys can too.
Thank you for your very impassioned
plea.
And I do think that we are all committed to making sure that we can continue this very productive work in Minnesota. I think that's what
Mr.
we're
Chairman,
here
I
for.
Wonder if Mr. McGowan has that
yes,
amendment.
Mr. McGowan, do you have the amendment prepared?
Well,
to
Mr.
include?
Chairman, I do. I think because volunteer firefighters,
Chair?
A, are not employed by the municipality, and B, wouldn't be doing the solicitation while on duty, you would have to say, and I would insert this after duty on 1.9, or volunteer firefighters serving the municipality while not on duty.
Mr. Chairman, that would be my amendment.
Does everyone understand the amendment? On that amendment. Questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the oral amendment offered by Senator Rust, stated by Mr. McGowan, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. on
Chairman,
the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I would then move that Senate File 2413 as amended be recommended to pass.
Senator Rust renews her motion that Senate File 2413 as amended be recommended to pass. On that motion, Senator Carlson.
Well, I had a question. First of all, I did also have an opinion on that volunteer firefighters, because I don't think they're on duty unless they're on call. And I think that the amendment took care of that. But also, I had a question for Mr. Grundhofer earlier. You said that the cities were assuming that they had the authority for firefighters. I think that was the intent of the earlier discussion, and now we're making it clear. Can we say that if we do not pass this, that they still have the authority, or that they still could do it? And also, does that extend to police officers while on duty?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, this is not about police officers. And what we're doing is clarifying what otherwise is an ambiguous situation. They may assert that they already have this authority. This makes sure that the statutes are crystal clear with regard to this particular activity.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Carlson.
Senator Rest, what I'm saying is that I'm pleased that we're making this crystal clear, but if we, my point is that if this were not adopted, that it remains unclear, and that it remains unclear for both firefighters and for police officers.
That would be the case.
Senator Rest. Senator Roebling.
Thank you. With Senator Carlson, I think that the professions are different enough mm-hmm. that we can make a distinction here, because the firefighters do actually have time when they're not at fire calls, and they have, they might be back at the station playing cards or reading the newspaper, where police officers, we probably wouldn't want them taking away from their patrol duties and things like that in order to collect contributions while on duty.
And okay. Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, that's exactly my point.
Yes. Okay. On Senator Rest's motion, any other discussion, comments, questions from members? Anyone else in the audience care to speak on Senate File 2413? Seeing none, Senator Rust renews her motion. Senate File 2413, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Commerce. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Senator Rust, Senate File 2259.
Mr. Chairman, before we move on, I guess I have
Senator Pappas,
there seems to be some committee, I can't think of the word, leakage. Why would Commerce want to see this?
Because of the insurance issue.
The insurance issue. Oh, all right.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Rust, for that clarification.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 2259 addresses the joint powers statute and adds federally recognized Indian tribes to allow them to be parties to a joint powers agreement. And the issue comes up because many of you know that about the proposal for the Northern Lights Express, that mm-hmm. is a train going from the metropolitan area, Twin Cities metropolitan area, up to Duluth, and just as there are many coalitions that promote and follow things like highways, I know we had one for Highway 100 a number of years ago that involved the cities along Highway 100 to promote it with the Department of Transportation and Met Council, et cetera. The Mille Lacs tribe that is what would be along this rail line at Hinckley wanted to be a full partner with the other municipalities that are promoting the Northern Lights Express. And so we bring that particular change to the statute. Mr. Chairman, I also have an author's amendment, which is the A1 amendment.
Oh, we have that in our
And I would move the A1 amendment.
Senator Rest moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor of the A1 author's amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
The bill then that's in front of you, Mr. Chairman, now not only includes federally recognized Indian tribes to deal with the situation I just mentioned, but also the Minnesota Historical Society came to me and said that it would be helpful to them in dealing with the issues of the, I'll call them decrepit buildings at Fort Snelling, if they could also enter into a joint powers agreement with the municipalities that are also involved to move forward with the proposals to correct the and restore or rebuild or whatever it is, rehabbing the work that they're doing with those buildings that we see when we drive along by Fort Snelling. And as I understand it, there's no objections from the League. There's no objections from other entities that are part of the joint powers agreement. And we certainly have testimony if you would like to hear it, but I think it's a pretty straightforward inclusion and for very obvious reasons.
This does seem like a pretty straightforward bill. Any questions of members?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that Senate File 2259 be recommended to pass.
Senator Rest moves Senate File 2259 as amended be recommended to pass. On that amendment, on that motion, any questions? Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Rest, where will this bill go from here? Will
to
it go
floor.
To the taxes?
It'll go
taxes
directly
committee.
To the floor, Senator Gimsey. Any other questions, comments? Seeing none, Senator Rest renews her motion that Senate File 2259, as amended, be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, then I also bring you Senate File 2309 and would ask the representative from the City of New Hope to join me. There are two cities that are governed by, in Minnesota. New Hope is one of them. East Grand Forks is the other, that which is why Senator Stump joins me in offering this bill that provides for that are governed by the statute that says that the probationary period for peace officers is different from it is than that which exists for every other city in the state, and it will bring them both New Hope and East Grand Forks into dealing with a probationary period then is for 12 months. And I'll ask Mr. Johnson to speak briefly to this and the problems that it's caused for the City of New Hope. And then I would hope that members would be agreeable to this going on the consent calendar.
Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Rich Johnson. I'm the Human Resources Manager for the City of New Hope. And real briefly, we've been following the six-month probationary period, as Senator Rest mentioned. We'd like to extend that to 12 months to make it possible be the same as everyone else in Minnesota and to provide an adequate period for training and evaluation of new police officers. In 2009, we hired a police officer who required an extended leave of absence during their probationary period. By the time they were able to return to work, the time remaining in that six-month period was inadequate to complete their training and give them a reasonable evaluation period. So we ended up having to terminate their probationary period. If we would have had the one-year probationary period in place, we could have picked up on the training, had sufficient time to evaluate their performance, and go forward.
Questions of members?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roman.
You know, we have 3-year tenure for teachers, and is even 12 months long enough? I wonder sometimes if it's adequate.
Well, we've been dealing with 6 months, so 12 months would be wonderful for us. And I think if the rest of the state is at 12 months, I think the answer is yes.
Mr. Chairman, I would move then that Senate File 2309 be recommended to pass and place it on the consent calendar unless there is an objection.
Is there any questions or comments on Senator Rust's motion? Seeing none, Senator Rust moves that Senate File 2309 be recommended to pass and placed on the consent calendar. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, we will be meeting on Monday at a regular time. We have a full agenda on that day, but we have no further business before this committee, and I invite you to adjourn it.
There being no further business before this committee, we stand adjourned.